you're not going to gain any fitness the week before a race.
You could sleep for 12 hours, but sleep like crap.
That's right. Don't go and try to smash yourself the week before an event to get ready for the weekend. It's the exact opposite.
I think when you have this number, this staple, like Ken Roczen, number 94, that's built into your identity.
Think about your shocks, right? As long as it doesn't G out through the stroke of the fork or the shock, it's always plush. But once it G's out, what do we all say? Ouch.
Welcome to the Vet Show, part of the Coach Rob Podcast Network. Coach Rob, episode number 11, brought to you by Energy Fuel. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, thank you so much. Man, can you imagine that we're on show number 11? I know I say at the beginning of each one, but it seems like the month goes by so quickly. You and I get to bench racing and we take some mental notes on, hey, we need to share this with the vet crowd. You know what I mean? And it just seems like yesterday we were chatting and here we are again. Welcome to the new month.
I know. It's crazy. It's absolutely insane. This show is brought to you by Energy Fuel. Like I just said, all of our listeners and followers can catch that over at the coachrobstore.com. There's plenty of flavors to choose from. I've been on the pink lemonade kick, Coach, for years now, right? And we just were discussing before we started the show that we're going to try watermelon. So I'm going to try watermelon this time, but make sure you guys jump over to coachrobstore.com, get yourself some Energy Fuel. It is by far the best. And I say this every time, Coach, I know you hate this. I know you hate me plugging your products, but there's a lot of energy, you know, drinks and hydration powders and protein. And all, there's a lot of that stuff on the market and all of it tastes like shit. Pardon my friend, but your stuff tastes the best and it works the best. So make sure you guys get over there and check that out.
No, I appreciate it. And just for somebody who may not be aware of the Energy Fuel, we try to create as many flavors as we can. You know, myself being an endurance athlete, you know, you train on one flavor for 5 or 6 months, then you get to race day and it's like, if I have another sip of that flavor, I'm going to throw it at somebody. So we do realize, you know, we've got your staples, we've got your lemon limes, and we've got your oranges and all that. But then we brought in, like you say, this one of the seasonals is watermelon, pink lemonade's another one, and grape and all these other ones. But when you look at the science of it, and I just want to make sure that the particularly those in Europe, I don't know why in Europe it's such a big deal. Finding an energy drink that actually has calories in it is the number one thing you've got to focus on. When we went over to Australia to do some performance camps, you know, we started interacting with the group a little bit at lunchtime and we were discussing, hey, how many calories is your sports drink yielding? And we were surprised to realize that a majority of the powders are nothing more than electrolyte. There's no calories. So please, if you're not using Energy Fuel, make sure that you read the label. You've got to be taking in around 300 calories per hour. So the idea here is if you look at the calorie density, make sure that there is actual calories in it. I kind of feel foolish saying that, but I made an assumption that I shouldn't. So take a look at that. And like I say, I appreciate the kind words, but we have put a lot of work into it. You'll notice there's 3 formulations, 8 flavors. We're just trying to keep a product that works tasting good when you're using it a lot. So appreciate that.
The cool thing, Coach, and you know me, I am in the morning. I'm not a morning person, but... Mm-hmm. So I tend not to eat breakfast, and especially when I go ride, because I just, you know, I get up, I load my bike and, you know, I'm, raring to get to the track. I forget to eat. So having the Energy Fuel with the calories for me, it helps. So
absolutely.
CoachRobStore.com. Coach, episode number 11. I mean, I already kind of think I know who your guy for number 11 is going to be.
Bradshaw? I want to hear yours. You go ahead.
Okay. Mine's gotta be Chiz, right? Kyle Chisholm. Bradshaw's my era too, but Kyle Chisholm has been number 11 forever. He's on his, this is the last year that he's going to race professionally. So, and he's still making main events at, you know, damn near my age, which is insane.
Yeah. Well, when we get to number 11, I'm always on a struggle with this one because I look like when I go back to growing up, you know, my idols, the Marty Smiths of the world, the Brock Lovers of the world, the David Baileys, then you kind of go into that, got a little bit older, and then you have everybody like a Jimmy Button that's in that loop right there. And then, you know, obviously I've got a soft spot for Chiz. I had a chance to work with him when we were teammates with Stewart on San Manuel Yamaha. And like you said, you look at who Chiz has raced against, right? If you start at the most recent, go Jet, Chase, Webb, Tomac, then go down, what would be that next gen? You know, Ricky, Chad, James. Then you go back a little bit lower than that, back to McGrath. I mean, Chiz has raced against them all. And the longevity of that guy is unbelievable. Super cool family, him and Brittany both. I'm totally blown away by what Chiz has been able to do. But, you know, when I think of this number, think about Ezra Lusk on Kawasaki. Think about Jimmy Button on that Yamaha. Think about Jeff Emig at the U.S. Open on the Yamaha. It's amazing when you start thinking about the historical elements associated with the number and how diversified, blue, yellow, green, like I say, Bradshaw. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Bradshaw was running that white Yamaha, was he not? Yes, white yours? Right. Yeah, on number 11. So yeah, the number 11's got a lot because, like I said, I go back to the Marty Smith, the Gary Semichs of the world, Bailey. Those were my idols growing up. So yeah, it's cool to see 11 is still strong and pushing it out there. What do you think? Who's going to take number 11 next year when Chiz doesn't come back to defend it? I guess that's not true because it has to sit idle for 1 year without accumulating points. So it'll be available in 27 unless he relinquishes it because he knows he's not coming back. I don't know how that would work.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who would take, you know, I'll be honest. Like it's somebody would want to take 11, right? And it's a low number, but I'll be, you know, like AC taking number 9.
Yeah.
I thought that was a terrible decision.
I did.
Chase taking number 4 from 23, thought it was a terrible decision. I think when you have this number, this staple, like Ken Roczen number 94, that's built into your identity, right?
Absolutely.
So I would like to see some of these guys keep their number that, you know, that they have an identity behind instead of just taking a lower number because it's a lower number. But
no, I totally agree. Look over your right-hand shoulder. Think about just right here off the top of our head, right? Look at how 18 has become solidified in our head to represent Jet. And yes, he's been number 1, but we still think of 18. Go back to AC. 92 will always be AC for me.
Yeah.
Period. And, you know, it's like Pastrana never deviated away from 199. And when's the last time Pastrana was on a racetrack? Yet we still remember it.
Oh, so 100%.
I do agree with you from a branding standpoint. You know, you talk to Lucas Myrtle and you talk about the value of a brand and the way that I always think of Travis Pastrana being a brand of 199.
Yeah.
You know, you stop and you think about that. So it just, if you go and you look at historical, how much of an indelible mark it puts in our brain, I do have to agree. And let's face it, somebody like Lucas Myrtle at such a high agency level that is working big corporate deals. Think about Dunge, right? Being on the cover of Wheaties, having earbuds, and then those earbuds were being sold in Target. And we all saw Target just on the palm of Dunge. It wasn't flamboyant and in your face. That's all the work of an agent. You know, the riders are responsible for getting up, eating, sleeping, riding, racing, repeating. So yeah, the branding of a 199, the branding of number 4, branding of number 7. As I call these out for anyone who's watching or listening, when I say 7, you think James, you hear 4, you think Ricky, you hear 199, you think Travis. It's just 92 for me will always be AC, not number 9. Sorry.
100%. And I don't know, 11 to me is just, it's just not, and I want to apologize to all my number 11s out there. It's just not a cool number to me.
Well, think about it. Is you're so good, you get 2 number 1s?
I don't know. Coach, you're stretching it. You're stretching it. Let's get into the today's topic. We're just coming off a couple big amateur races, Daytona Supercross. We've got a couple of big amateur races coming up in out here on the West Coast. Oh, we have Texas coming.
Yeah.
We have a Spring-a-Ding, right?
Yeah, Freestone Spring-a-Ding right after Daytona. And then you've got your qualifiers out there on the West Coast for some Loretta's, some Mammoth.
Yep.
So our vet riders have a pretty full schedule ahead of them here in the next couple months.
So I wanted to dive in deep, right? Because the weather's starting to get nice. So there's a lot of races coming, not just these big events, but, you know, a lot of local series are coming, going to be starting here very shortly due to the nicer weather. And This is the best time of riding, you know, we're getting into spring. So I want to talk about three specific buckets, coach, and then kind of break them down, right? And the first one is going to be preparation. I want to talk about evaluating the race and also recovery. So those are one of the three buckets that I want to stay in today and then break down some of those. And I've got some bullet points I want to kind of pick your brain on.
Absolutely.
The first one, let's just start, is preparation, right? It's for us vet riders, it's probably, I think, the toughest thing, because to prepare, you got to find time. And as we always say, just about anything in every show, time, we just, it's limited. We, as vet riders, we have families, jobs, businesses, other, you know, other priorities, and preparing is tough. And so, I want to talk, the main thing, coach, is food. You know, what should we be eating, preparing for these races? And I know we've talked about, you know, circling the perimeter of the grocery store, but
sure.
Can you just maybe get a little bit more in detail for somebody that may want more detail, not just something so general?
When the interesting part about preparation is really about confidence, because I'll get these questions quite a bit. Maybe we'll have time to get into them here today. But, you know, it's like, hey, should I eat this or should I drink this? Or what kind of behavior should I not do? And I guess we can dive into that here since you've got it broken into three subjects. But when you look at preparation, I always want people to kind of pump the brakes a little bit. It's going to sound like a little condescending, and I don't mean for it to be, but you're not going to gain any fitness the week before a race. And this is like, because what you said, Dan, everybody's super busy. We have families, jobs, partners. We have maybe some driving, depending on how far you've got to go to get to the races. So that week leading up to the race, you don't, and I hate to use the word don't, right? Because as soon as I say don't think of a pink cow with black spots, our brain goes there. When you're looking at the consistency of your training, right? When you're talking about preparing, unfortunately, once you're a week or two outside from the event, there's nothing else you can do. What if you work in a mode of fear, what can happen is you just go to the race tired because you squeezed out a couple hard workouts trying to get ready. And that actually backfires on you because you left your best performances out on the track 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago, 4 days ago, 2 days ago, and then you're flat on race day. Now, there's a complete science behind being in peak form. Like, for example, a rested muscle will store sugar, also known as glycogen. It'll store sugar more efficiently if you do just a little bit the day before an event versus sitting around and being completely idle. That's been proven scientifically over and over again. The big question is, how hard, intensity-wise, how long, duration-wise, should I do it the day before the event? And that is very individual. Dan, I know all of your training schedule, so I know what volume is going to kind of prime the motor a little bit versus somebody who doesn't have a lot of fitness. You've got to conserve it, right? We just said you can't gain any fitness the day before a race, but you can certainly lose it by going in tired. Well, when we're talking about priming the motor, the food that you eat being converted to stored sugar for energy, there's a fine science with that. But here's the interesting part. Whenever somebody says to me, Rob, how do I get prepared for Daytona? How do I get ready for Freestone? How do I get ready for a Mammoth or a Loretta's qualifier? Well, we should have been having this conversation 6 months ago. That's why this show is so important to you and I, because we never know when a new listener is going to come in and when they're going to hear the information for the first time. Maybe you don't have 6 months of consistency because you didn't realize it was important. Well, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. But realize it takes 6 months to turn the physiological machine around. Literally, the body that you're sitting with right now, as you watch this and listen to this, is a byproduct of everything you've eaten and every workout that you've done. And now that may sound like a Captain Obvious statement, but a lot of people don't realize the workout you do today isn't going to improve your fitness by Friday, 7 days from now. It's going to take 6 months from the day. So every day you build cells, you build muscle, you drop body fat, the body's constantly adapting and adjusting every single day. But Dan, here's the part that gets crazy. When we look at the idea of being prepared, I want the listeners to write down, commit to memory, whatever works for you. Strive to come in under-trained versus coming in over-trained. Does that make any sense at any level? Like we're talking about, don't go and try to smash yourself the week before an event to get ready for the weekend. It's the exact opposite. Does that make sense at any level?
It does. And I think it's important on as a vet rider as well. Because again, I go back to the time, right? Mm-hmm. And we tend to think, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to get started, you know, I'm going to get started today. And in 6 months, I'm going to be this fit race machine and stuff, but life gets in the way. Right.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden we're looking at the calendar and we're like, oh my God, you know, the Loretta's qualifiers in 6 weeks, I got to bust ass. And all of a yeah. sudden you're at the gym and you're like grinding. And next thing you know, we just don't recover as quick.
That's right.
Plain and simple. And so you show up to the race and you're already spent because of all the workouts and, you know, the ground you're trying to make up that you never will, that you think you are, you know?
Well, you hit the nail on the head, and 2 weeks out from an event, you can't make up for 6 months of consistency. That's why I can't emphasize it enough. When I make this comment, some people think I'm being sarcastic, and I'm not. When you get home from work, before you even leave the office, put your walking shoes on, running shoes, whatever. When you get to your house, do not go in the door. Just walk down the street for 15 minutes, turn around and come back. And people go, oh my goodness, that's such a waste of time. Well, 30 minutes on your feet, you're melting some body fat, you're building some durability, tendons and ligament. A lot of people don't realize it takes more muscle to walk than it does to run because of the full impact on the ground and then lifting yourself up off the ground. If you ever want to test this, go do a 3-hour walk and see how sore you get. And when you look at the idea, if you walk out 15 minutes and walk back and you do that 5 days a week, that's 2.5 hours of walking. You're burning fat. You're building durability with the tendons and ligaments, bone density. No, it's not a high intensity workout, but if you just left the office and you're already tight on time, to your point, Dan, a stressed out body doesn't need to be stressed even more. Now, we're not coddling anybody. We're just living in the real world. And that's where when your first question that you first posed here today, nutrition, this is the question I get. Hey, what should I eat differently the night before the event? Nothing. Eat exactly what you ate last Friday night. And this is where we do get into some sensitive subjects. We're going to assume here that everybody who's listening is mature, right? I'll get people who say to me, hey, Rob, can I have an adult beverage on Friday night before the race? And this is always my question, and I don't want it to sound like I'm being disrespectful. Last Saturday, you went and rode. You got geared up, Dan, and you went out to Hangtown. Zeb invited you out, and you got a chance to go ride. You had a couple adult beverages on Friday night. And you called me up on Sunday and you're like, dude, I had the best day with Zeb riding yesterday. I'm like, cool. I didn't ask you what you ate. I didn't ask you what you consumed the night before beverage-wise. You just told me that you had a really good day of riding. And what do I always say to you? What'd you eat the day before? How did you create such a good day on the track? So because you have to understand that your body doesn't know if it's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, doesn't know what zip code you're in, postal code if you're in Europe. It doesn't know. It doesn't care. It's looking for consistency. Eat the same breakfast, snacked on the same things all day. Eat the same thing for dinner. You got up, you went to the track, you rode really well. Cool. This is where documentation helps. One of the things I get a lot of questions about is pizza, Dan.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh, I can't eat pizza. That's a splurge food. Let's walk through this. If you go down to a high quality Italian restaurant, they hand make their dough using real ingredients. They make their own tomato sauce with relatively low sugar, good amount of salt, which is an electrolyte you lose in sweat. When you look at all of the vegetables, they're all, you know, let's call them fresh. I'm not going to use the word organic because I can get adulterated. They're using high quality meats on there, sausage, pepperonis, if you're not a vegetarian. They're using real cheese. And what do we mean by real cheese? It means if you put it on the counter, it stays in its original consistency. That's called a hard cheese. Like if you have a block of mozzarella, you have a block of Havarti, it doesn't melt on the table. That's real cheese. Think about Europe. Their cheeses aren't even chilled.
Yeah.
So when you look at a pizza, right, you get the carbohydrates from the bread, you get the carbohydrates from the vegetables, you get the protein and the fat from the cheese and the protein products, you get the vegetables with electrolytes and all that goes in it. Explain to me how a pizza is bad for you.
Yeah.
Assuming you don't have like celiac disease where gluten is going to tear you up. Even then you can get gluten-free dough nowadays when you go to these high-end Italian restaurants. But it's just an example of how things get kind of taken out of context. Now, if you're doing a $4 pizza, yeah, you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
But if you pay $38 for a large or extra large pizza, you get what you pay for.
Man, Coach, where are you getting extra large pizzas for $38? We went to the pizza place the other night, and it was like $100 for three of us for just a one pizza and a couple sets. It's insane.
Well, see, this is where I'm going to narc on you a little bit. See, you didn't tell everybody it was the four pitchers of beer that you and your bride had with the pizza, and your daughter had to drive. No, I'm just kidding, guys. Dan doesn't even drink. But, you know, and it brings us up to the other two other things that I get hit up on. You brought up nutrition, right? And again, yep. Your body doesn't know if it's Friday night, you know, race weekend, or if it's Friday night and you're going, you know, on date night Saturday. It doesn't matter. Always go compare to how you rode last weekend, last Wednesday, whatever time you were on the bike. And what did you eat the day before? What'd you eat the day leading up to it? That's where MyFitnessPal, in my opinion, is such a great resource. Because as you put foods in, you can measure and evaluate, did it make you sleepy? Or did you have good high levels of energy? If you did, it passes your energy test. Now we get into the very, very volatile. I was teasing earlier about being mature. Okay, so what should I eat on Friday night? Same thing you ate last Friday night. Well, last Friday night I had a couple beers, right? With my pizza. How'd you ride on Saturday? You know, I rode pretty good. Then evidently you're the type of person that can drink beer on Friday. And when I say beer, it could be an adult beverage of any type, wine, hard liquor. That's not for me to choose. All I'm saying is you got to put it through your own litmus test. Am I going to tell you that drinking it the night before is the best thing in the world? Depends how your body responds to it. Some people, they drink a glass of wine, they sleep really well. Have two beers, they sleep well. Some people have two beers and can't sleep for 3 days. You've got your own answer.
That's me.
But here's the other side of the equation, right? You have good food, you have a couple adult beverages, and then the question is, can I be amorous with my partner the night before? Last Friday night, you were amorous with your partner and you just told me that you rode the wheels off the bike on Saturday. I think you've got your answer to your test. You've got the answer to your question. Now, there's going to be some hardcore bodybuilder that's going to be in the group that says, if you're not amorous and you don't have that release, it gets the testosterone up, and that the research indicates that gets a little bit more of that, you know, that animal, that beast comes out in you. I'm not going to argue with it.
But is this clinically proven? Like, is that, it is.
Yeah, it is proven. But
so technically, you should not have sex before.
But see, where I have to argue with it is you told me that you rode really well last Saturday and you were amorous with your partner. So, yeah, I can show you all the research in the textbook, but remember what you and I say? We have to take it beyond just the textbook, because I've got individuals who will have a large pizza, have two or three adult beverages, be amorous with their partner, and nobody can touch them. So they just debunk the idea that what the textbook says. This is where, and again, please forgive me if it sounds disrespectful. Dude, if you're already fit and a badass on a motorcycle, you just have to be faster than the other people. So here's the way I look at it, Dan. I want you to be amorous with your wife, have a couple adult beverages, have a good pizza, and still beat everybody. So then the guy that's not eating pizza, not having adult beverages, and not being amorous with his partner, he's a miserable dude. You're a happy dude that's hauling ass on a bike and nobody can beat you. So you got the best of both worlds. But all joking aside, that's why you got to put things through the test during the week. Don't worry about what the textbook. Remember, I was using the one with Brian and the apple. He eats an apple, his face explodes. He's allergic to apples, but an apple is a healthy item. And I want people to think about, how did you perform on the motorcycle the last time that, in your own words, would say was good? Now, back up the entire day and then back up the day before. What'd you eat? How much you drink? Where'd you go? You know, behaviors, all of that. And man, when you do this, it like takes the weight of the world out of your backpack, because you're like, hey man, I've proven that I can eat pizza. I can have a Häagen-Dazs ice cream bar. I can have two beers, be amorous with my wife, and still win. Good for you.
And this is why it's important, right? The 6 month window, right? Because it's going to be some trial and error.
100%.
And you got to keep track of it. It takes a little bit of effort to keep track of it. And
because it goes back to confidence, as we said earlier, right? When you're talking about preparation, it's more about confidence in what you're doing and the results that come with it. Didn't mean to interrupt you, but I want to make sure that confidence word comes back around.
Yeah. No, that's it's important. Because like I said, this is the toughest for us. Mm-hmm. Because it takes effort.
Absolutely.
So that's where it comes. So we've kind of touched on the food thing. We've kind of touched on the sex thing, the adult beverage thing. We touched on. I don't think. I mean, Coach, right? If you're gonna go out and you're gonna have three pitchers of beer on Friday night and go race, you're gonna dehydrate yourself. There's just no way around that. Correct.
Well, it's interesting. Science has proven that beer is actually not a, it doesn't dehydrate you. What's the word I'm looking for? It's not a diuretic. That's been proven. And it's funny because, as you know, probably back in your college days, we joke about breaking the seal because once you go urinate once, it's like you're going every 15 minutes after you break the seal. But yeah, research has proven that it's not a diuretic. It has a tendency to do with more about what you do with the beer. What are you eating with it? Something that has a lot of sodium in it, that's going to cause you to urinate more. And then, yes, the more that you urinate, of course, there's a chance of dehydration. But we want to go back to the idea that if you know how much water you need to take in on a daily basis, the formula is very simple. Take your body weight in pounds, divide it by 2. That number equals how many ounces you should consume over an 8 to 10 hour day. Now you're hydrated, but that does not include what you lose in the form of sweat. Because when we say generically, what is your hydration level? It's what you need to stay alive, plus how much you lose in sweat being offset. Because some of our listeners are very big sweaters. You know, they could do a 1 hour ride, bicycle, rower, swim, and lose 5-6 pounds, 2.5 kilos. So you've got to be a student of what your sweat rate is. But no, you're exactly right. You've got to test what does and does not work. What does cause dehydration and what doesn't. And the only way to do that is baptism by fire, quite honestly.
And then working out, right? Again, it's you got to start 6 months ahead of time. I think it's probably more critical for, you know, guys and gals our age, right? Because our bodies don't transform as fast as they did when we were younger. So,
well, weightlifting, most people think of strength training as like, you know, wanting to be a bodybuilder. And as we get progressively older, strength training is actually going to stimulate the production of testosterone. It's going to stimulate more thicker bone density because of the load-bearing exercises of lifting. There's just a multitude of benefits that come with it. And all jokes aside, right, if you're lifting weights, that's going to help the testosterone levels go up, which helps with the sex drive. But it also helps, believe it or not, testosterone is a precursor to production of red blood cells. A lot of people don't know that. So weightlifting has just a multitude of benefits. Now, again, we're not saying you've got to be Hercules, just enough. And obviously, this gets into periodization. There's a time during the year you need to lift really heavy. That would be preseason. But then when you get into, you know, the race season and you start incorporating more and more speed work, both on and off the bike, you want to pull back on the weight. What we refer to as the total number, the amount of load associated with weight training. We want to pull that down a little bit. But we have our athletes actually lift weights all the way up to the week of the race. Because when you lift weights, it keeps the tensile strength of the tendons and ligaments. It keeps them kind of firing and it helps keep the joints tight. That's just a little FYI benefit. Now, again, we're not lifting weights to the level that's going to leave you sore. But we want to keep the tendons and ligaments engaged and keep the tensile strength very, you know, very tight, if you will, if you can imagine that.
I think there in motocross, right, specifically, there's a fine line, right? You don't want to be too big, like, you know, as far as too much muscle, right?
Yeah.
Because it restricts blood flow, from what I understand, like in your arms, things like that.
Not really. The things that's going to restrict arm flow is going to be how much if you're putting a death grip on something, that's going to cut off blood flow more than anything else. So it really, and this is what makes our sport so fascinating, is when you watch the top pros, right? If you watch their hands, you'll notice sometimes you'll even see light go in between their hands. They're not letting go of the bars. They're just that relaxed with their hands because they know the bike is being driven from their knees down. Most people realize the belly button down drive directs the rear wheel, belly button and above directs the front wheel. That's just physiological fact. Belly button down controls the rear, belly button and above controls the front wheel. So if your toes inward, you've got very, very strong inner thigh muscles known as the adductors, right? The adductors are that muscle that runs from your pubic bone down to the inside of your knee. So those need to be gripping the bike. That's where you need to be putting a death grip and get that load off your arms. So you can create arm pump by believe it or not, this is where people who take testosterone, we talked about it in the last show. When you take testosterone shots, you're causing the muscles underneath. You've got the sheath that goes around the muscle. We use the analogy of sausage. As that muscle hypertrophies, the hypertrophy of that muscle growing grows faster than the sheath it's in, and your arms have a tendency to get really, really rock hard. So what ends up happening is that tissue between, your wrist and your elbow, that compartment doesn't expand. So that's why you feel like you could pop it at the end of the day. Weight training isn't going to cause arm pump, but if you lift incorrectly, you could get things that act like arm pump. It's actually the overdevelopment of the muscle tissue. And then the testosterone just compounds the problem. So anybody who's taking testosterone, synthetic T, unfortunately, that's going to be the number one catalyst for your arm pump. Now, to your point, though, Dan, just one little side note. Weightlifting, you know, in regards to trying to be strong, there's a way that you can lift weights without building the muscle girth, the thickness of the muscle tissue. All you got to do is look at elite runners, right? They've got convex bird chests, and they've got these legs that don't look like a bodybuilder. But if you looked at the amount of power that they're generating at a 4-minute mile, that's a tremendous amount of power. So you can create muscular power without the thickness. Now, there's a point of diminishing returns, especially in our sport. Somebody who's got a little bit more muscle mass is going to be resilient to impact injuries. What do we always say? You know, it's a quick stop when you hit that ground. So when you look at the muscle being able to absorb that almost like a cushion, and if the muscle can control it, that's awesome. If it can absorb it, that's awesome. And then once it goes through that muscle, then the bone, if it's thick enough, can absorb it, and hopefully you don't end up breaking something or tearing something.
Real quick, I don't want to get too off the rails here, but
yeah,
if you're a chubby person, if you will, does that provide the same type of impact protection as somebody that's like strong muscular?
No, not even remotely close. So if you go up to someone like yourself, this is going to sound like I'm your man friend here, but when you take your shirt off, right, your arm, let's take your biceps. If I punch you in the arm, right, you can absorb that with no problem, whatever, because the density of that muscle is just, it's like iron. Then when you take something that's adipose tissue, it's very squishy. So unfortunately, you don't get, it's almost like a crash test dummy. If you're very muscular, you can absorb a lot more energy than the adipose tissue. The adipose tissue is just, I hate to use this word, it's fluffy, right? It doesn't have, a lot of us think it's going to be like marshmallow, where it's going to be like a pillow effect. No, because if you go up to somebody who's fat, look how easy it is to push your finger through, let's say a guy in his belly, look how easy it is for me to push into that. And then someone who's got a strong abdominal from their sternum to their pubic bone, if you press in that muscle is called rectus abdominis. If you press into that, you can't push your finger into their kidneys, right? Or into any internal organ. But if you've got this layer of body fat, you can just go right into where you do hit muscle. And then it's like hitting a break. So you want to be muscular for sure.
Yeah, I always wanted to, I want to debunk that.
I will contradict myself. When you get into the internal organs, you want to have enough adipose tissue that encapsulates the organs because it does provide you an extra level of cushion because the organs are bouncing off the internals. I know that's very gross, but that's a reality. We're talking about superficial impact. We want to absorb that with the muscle to try to keep the least amount going all the way into the internals. Think about your shocks, right? As long as it doesn't G out through the stroke of the fork or the shock, it's always plush. But once it G's out, what do we all say? Ouch.
Yeah.
That energy got to go somewhere.
A little bit of chubbiness does help against internal injuries potentially.
Well, you can have 3-4% body fat on the outside and still have good coverage of the organs inside.
Got it.
I don't want that to be misunderstood. You want to have a low percentage of body fat on the outside for impact. And we can get into other things like muscle economy, calorie burn. The leaner you are, the more efficient you are at being able to push and pull, which makes your endurance go up, your sprint speed go up. Just a little fun fact. If you ever get your VO2 max assessed, they'll always measure your body fat percentages. The lower your percentage of body fat, the higher your VO2 max will always be, just based on a mathematical calculation. Because we factor in percentage of body fat when we calculate VO2 max.
Interesting.
Yep. So
Okay, let's move on to our next bucket. I think we've kind of covered preparation. Yes, the next bucket that I have is evaluate the race. And there's really three things here, right, in my mind that you can evaluate, and that's your lap times, how consistent those lap times are, or even you as just a individual, how consistent you are, and then the deviation. And if you could maybe touch on those three bullet points, that'd be great.
Yeah, the thing that kills me is I train individuals, especially vet riders. If you go into our membership area, we have express workouts that are designed specifically for vet riders. And I'm not saying that as a sales pitch. I want the whole world to be using our membership area because we've put thousands of hours into that membership area. I understand everybody's tight on time. So for me, what's crazy is you train, we work together to try to find that balance so that you get enough stress on the body, you get fitter, you get leaner, you get faster, you have better endurance. Well, we'll have listeners that will go and train 5-6 months for a race, and you go and you win the race. I'm not surprised. That's what you trained to do. And I say that very, very humbly, right? I know that people, when they take their hard-earned dollars and they invest into our membership, my responsibility is to make sure that they get fitter, faster, better endurance. That's my responsibility. Then we go racing and I'm like, well, talk to me about your race. Well, I won. Oh, that's cool. Well, we understand that. That's what you train for. What about your transponder times? Well, why does it matter? I won. How'd you win? Did you negative split? So you got progressively faster each lap? Did you have an even tempo pace the whole time through? You know, we talk about somebody like Chase Sexton, right? Hitting the gate and then coming all the way back to third, going down in the first turn, coming all the way back and winning the race. If you were to look at lap times would tell you a tremendous story. And then what I'm able to do for our listeners is you give me lap times, then we go into your Garmin and we look at your heart rate. At what point, let's be negative because it'll help create a more positive understanding. You go down in the first turn, you're madder than a hornet. You get up and we look at your heart rate chart and we compare it against your lap times. Well, every lap, you were super consistent. You had less than a 1 second deviation. Well, the guy that was out in front, he went out like he stole it. He blew up and started coming backwards because he went anaerobic. You went out at, yeah, unfortunately you went down, but you didn't ride at an intensity heart rate that was beyond what you were capable of holding for the duration of the race. It's called critical speed against threshold of fatigue. It's beyond the scope of today's conversation. How fast can you go before you get tired? So when you give me your transponder times, I'm like, cool, Dan, you start out at a 203 and literally you got faster by 1 second every lap. That was intended. That's how we trained off the bike. That's how you won the race. Take something like Loretta's where you've got 10 laps. So what? You got a bad gate pick. We know if you're out to the left of the dog box, you're probably not going to be in the top 20 unless you just happen to pull a Sexton where you got a rolling start and you just happen to time it beautifully, right? Yep. You're not getting the whole shot from the last 10 gates out to the left at Loretta's. You're just not going to. So when you come around the start-finish line, you come over that tunnel jump at the end of the first lap and you're in 20th place, who cares? You've got 9 laps left. The idea is that you've trained yourself to get faster with each lap where everybody else goes out, blows up, hangs on for dear life. Well, you're going to race the way that you train. So this is where transponder times help me understand what your strategy is. It helps me understand, you mentioned deviation. If you've got you go out to Hangtown tomorrow, right? And you go out there, you don't know what the track's conditions are. So the last time you're out there, I'm just using loose numbers, Dan, because I haven't seen you at Hangtown. So let's say you go to Hangtown, and last time you're there, you're running 2 minute flat, no problem.
Ooh, it's not that good, Coach.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
So let's just say you're out there running a 2 minute lap time. Well, that was given today's conditions. You come out here this upcoming weekend, maybe it's a little bit muddy, maybe it's a little bit dry, whatever it may be. What I always encourage my athletes to do is go lay down a 5-lapper, throw out the fastest, throw out the slowest, average the other three, and that's your critical speed number for today's conditions, at least for that hour. You know, it could change every hour. We all know that you can get there and it'd be perfectly prepped and become a baked wind fest, you know, a track that's been windblown and baked all day long. It's going to slow down. It's going to get rougher, right? But what we're trying to teach the athlete, that's what I want the listeners to understand, is you need to come back from a race and be able to explain to me how you won your motos. I don't buy the idea, well, I'm just fit. I won. Well, being fit is only part of it. Remember we talked about the four pillars of success? Pillar one is being prepared, fed, rested, hydrated, and focused. Pillar number two is being fit, speed, endurance, sprint speed. I'm sorry, strength, sprint speed, and endurance. Number three is a strategy, inverse relationship between intensity and duration. If you have a 20-minute moto or a three-hour GNCC, you have to approach it at a completely different intensity level. Yeah, do the inverse, right? Because again, I'll use a negative, unfortunately, a negative example. If you're the person that made the mistake that went out like you stole it, blew up and went backwards, well, you slowed down 2 seconds a lap, but Dan, you got faster 1 to 2 seconds a lap. You're going to pass them at a net gain that makes them feel like they're tied to a pole. So you break them physically and mentally.
Yeah.
So now we look at your transponders and my question is, hey, Dan, what was your strategy? Well, let's look at your lap times. Now, there's always going to be parts to it. Let's say you're leading, you've got a 10-second lead, and you tuck the front end. Okay, well, that lap, we're going to be off the pace a little bit, but we know why. If you, and now remember how we talked about, Dan, if somebody's already racing at 95% of their maximum heart rate, and they stall the bike or they put the bike down, especially bikes that don't have an electric start, you remember back in the day when you had to sit and kickstart it, what does that do to your heart rate? Straight through the roof. So if you're already on the verge of going anaerobic and you stall or put the bike down and you have to kickstart it, you get the bike started, you are already anaerobic. So you're working in a mode without oxygen. So you're going to go backwards. That is not a fitness issue. That's because you're a mammal and you have to breathe oxygen and you don't have enough in your blood. So your lap times are going to go backwards. That's where I always say, share with me your transponder times.
Your lap times are either going to go backwards or you're going to end up on the ground again.
Exactly. And what do we say? The second accident is much worse than the first.
Oh, yeah.
Fully recover from the first one. And this is where I'm always fascinated. And anybody who's listening, I hope you guys will lean in on this offer, right? I'll have people that will come back from a high-profile race, and they're like, Rob, I need you. I need to get in shape. And I always start by looking at their food, because it could simply be that they ran out of gas. I look at their heart rate. It could be just that their strategy was wrong. Their fitness is good, but they don't know how to approach racing. Well, why don't they know how to approach racing? Because they think they could just throw the mud at the wall and everything's going to fall into place. No, no.
Yeah.
That's not how success is built. So there has to be a strategy. There's an inverse relationship between volume and intensity. The longer the race, you have to start out a little bit conservative to give yourself time to pick it up. And every year you go to Loretta's, you see the same thing. There'll be that person that gets a good start and they just go backwards. And if I'm racing you, right? Let's say, Dan, my MO is I go out, I'm super quick for two laps, but you, the diesel engine, you just get going. Well, by the time you catch me on lap three, I'm already gassed. I'm pissed off because you not only caught me, but you're just walking away slowly but surely. So I keep putting more effort in and I just keep going further and further behind.
Yep.
I'm like, how's Dan doing that? We work out together during the week. We do the same amount of work. Well, your strategy was correct. Mine was not. So that's why I say, you know, we talked earlier about preparation. Then when the race is over, that's what you've been doing all the work for. How did it work out? Did your plan work? Each race track's a little bit different. What makes it difficult? Heat, humidity, rough tracks, whatever. And then I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but that's where I believe you've got to look at the recovery side of things.
Yep. And that's where I wanted to go. I want to get to our third bucket, and that's the recovery. And the notes that I have down is in recovery is soreness, appetite, and then sleep. And I wanted to ask you on the first one, soreness. Yep. I don't know, coach, why or how this happened, but in my Instagram feed, the algorithm somehow got me on these new recovery soaks. That's like Epsom salt or magnesium and B12 or just a bunch of different stuff. Are those legitimate? Do they work?
Yeah, they all work. Your skin is the largest absorbing, you know, organ in your body. So when you lay in an Epsom salt bath and you just hit the big buzzword, magnesium, right? That's what your body is going to absorb through the Epsom salt in the water. The fact that the water is warm, it's anytime you submit soft tissue into water, that constant pressure, the hydrostatic pressure literally pushes into the skin and your body just absorbs it. So submersion is always much better. Where I'm getting at is a cold plunge is going to be more effective than a bag of ice on your elbow. So if you jam your elbow or your wrist, you're better off putting it in a 5-gallon bucket of cool water than just putting an ice bag on it. Submersion is always preferred. But here's the catch. If you eat good, high-quality food, you're going to get that B6, B12 that they're, say, floating in the water. Eat it. The Epsom salt and the contrast therapy, cooler temperature to warmer temperature, warmer back to cool, in a body of water that has Epsom salt in it, you're going to absorb the magnesium. It's a win-win because now you're getting an opportunity to let the muscles kind of relax in the water. The hydrostatic pressure is going to help you absorb. Your skin is nothing but one big organ that's absorbing at all times, like sunlight. Like when you sweat, you notice you sweat from your earlobes to your toenails. You don't just sweat on your arms. You sweat every square millimeter of your skin. Well, that's where, unfortunately, I have to be careful how I say this. Companies are going to market to laziness. And my thing is, like, for example, I own my own supplement company. If you go to the coachrobstore.com, you'll see that we have all kinds of supplements. How many times have I said, I don't want anybody to take supplements until we deem them necessary? That's why they're called supplements, supplement real food. And the reason why this becomes so important is if I say to a vet rider, hey, I've got this high quality whey protein, that whey protein is to help you get more amino acids to help offset muscle soreness associated with the muscles that we tore down. That amino acid is going to help support your immune system. Your immune system gets worn down from work and family and working out and racing and all that goes with it. But I don't want you to take my whey protein unless you're not getting enough amino acids from all the food that you're trying to eat. See the difference? Some people can have the most dialed, and I hate to use the word diet, the way that they consume food, they could have it absolutely dialed. They're eating every 2 hours, snacking on fruits and vegetables, lean protein. And at the end of the day, because fruits and vegetables and lean protein don't have a lot of calories, Dan, we've talked about this. You're a very tall guy. Your calorie burn rate's 35 to 4,500 calories. You can only eat so much fruits and vegetables and lean protein, and you're never going to bridge 4,000 calories. Yeah. You'd have to be eating constantly all day long. Well, that's where a high-quality smoothie is going to be very, very simple, nutrient-dense, calorically dense to help bridge what your body needs. But I'm not trying to sell you whey protein as a meal replacement. That's one of the problems we run into with some of our younger riders. If you say to them, this protein shake is going to be healthy, they say, well, I don't need to eat breakfast. I can just drink a milkshake. No. We need you to start with real food because when you eat real food, it absorbs in your mouth and you know, your muscles will be bigger, stronger, thicker, bones, ligaments, tendons, the whole nine yards. So when we're looking at that idea of recovery, those types of things that you're being marketed to, sure, they're going to work, but they only become one part of the whole process. So for example, you're much better off eating foods that have electrolytes, iodine, sodium, potassium, magnesium, calcium than any other way.
Sure.
When we're dealing with muscle soreness, contrast therapy definitely works. So people are seeing, hey, if we throw all these extra bells and whistles in the Epsom salt, we can make more money on it. And it's really not necessary. I apologize. Where I was going at with the supplements is, I don't ever encourage people to spend $12 to have a good workout, like this pre-workout routine.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but like creatine monohydrate, if you've never tried it before, it works extremely well. It's legal. It's called an ergogenic benefit. When you eat fruits and vegetables, you get creatine from that naturally. Well, every time your muscle contracts, it burns it. It eats it up like fuel. So when you take creatine, there's all kinds of benefits that come with it. The dangerous part about it is your body can get to a point where it won't make it anymore if it continues to sense that there's an outside source of it. Again,
and it's reliant, and you're reliant on.
Well, but you hit the nail on the head. I don't want somebody feeling like for me to have a good workout and to be able to move my bench or my squat or whatever you guys do, I don't want you to pay $7 to be able to move a lot of load around. Psychologically and financially, I don't want that. Now, we do have creatine monohydrate in our supplement line, because if you use it correctly and you load it, you'll definitely see a sports performance enhancement, 100%. But like you said earlier, Dan, you have to test it because it tends to be very polar. Either it works well or it dehydrates you very poorly, very badly. So I've seen athletes respond to it both ways. So you just have to do a little bit of research with it. And by the way, for those of you who are very, you know, aficionados of supplements, if your creatine is not $75 to $100, you're not getting high-quality creatine. So just an FYI for you, doing as much research as we've done and we're trying to source high quality supplements, good high quality creatine is expensive. It's expensive at, you know, for me to buy it, it's expensive at every level. But again, you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
So just FYI for you on that one. But yeah, recovery is important, Dan, because you mentioned it earlier. Sometimes people will, you know, they can't wait for the weekend to be over. Daytona is 2 days. Springing is, I think, 3 or 4 days. Then you have Freestone. That's a week long, or vice versa. I apologize. But here's the key. Have you ever had those days, Dan, where you just six motos at you know, Hangtown, at one of Zeb's places, maybe Sandbox or whatever, and you're like, I cannot wait to go home and go to bed. I am exhausted. And then you lay down and the sheets feel heavy.
That was me Saturday.
That's when you know you went too deep.
Yep.
And this goes back to the very first bucket that you mentioned earlier. If you try to race beyond what you've trained, you can always find that in your recovery bucket, because you shouldn't be sore for more than 48 hours. And when you are sore beyond those 48 hours, either you push the tissue way beyond what it's acclimated to, and or you didn't eat enough amino acids from protein sources to rebuild the tissue that's been torn down. I want that to be seen as an endless loop. Yeah. Because people will say to me, hey, Rob, I'm tired. I just did a consultation call with one of our top pros, not our pros, one of the guys you'll see on Saturday night. And he was very frustrated because he said, why am I tired? And I said, well, are you overtrained or are you under recovered? And that was a huge green light for him. He's like, no one's ever presented it that way. Because it's not always about that you're doing too much work. You're just not eating and sleeping enough to help you absorb the work that you did do. So are you overtrained or are you under recovered?
And I think that's one of the big ones is sleep, right? We've talked about it on every show. It's maybe the most critical piece to this whole thing.
Yes, sir.
Is making sure that you're getting the appropriate amount of, you know, quantity sleep. But more importantly, potentially, correct me if I'm wrong, is the quality. 100%. You want to make sure that you are getting a good quality night's rest instead of just, because you could sleep for 12 hours, but sleep like crap.
Right? That's right. That's why on the Garmin, we like it. Some of the other platforms are very convoluted. When you look at Garmin, they make it very simple. They give you total hours. They break down how many hours, or we do it as a percentage and a ratio. How much deep sleep, where your body releases HGH and testosterone. It's the only time that your body releases those recovery hormones. And then we compare that to your awake time. So like you say, Dan, you could be in bed for 9, 10, 12 hours. If you're tossing and turning for 4.5, 5 of those, there's no quality there. Yeah. And this is why I was teasing you earlier. When you lay down and the sheets feel heavy, you've smoked yourself.
Yeah.
And then what another little litmus test is, notice if you're not hungry at all. Now we're talking after 48 hours, right? You went so deep into the well, the residual soreness is still really, really high. Appetite is suppressed. There might be a high level of irritability. There's just all these little indicators that show that you went out and raced beyond what you're capable of physically. And because we're humans, we can tend to push ourselves a little bit more and a little bit further than what we're really capable of, but we will pay the price. And unfortunately, it's not always by winning is when you'll feel it. Sometimes you'll push beyond what you're capable of, still lose, and then it'll take 48 to, you know, 72 hours before you begin to start feeling remotely human. You've gone too deep. You didn't recover fully. And this is why I always say your appetite's a big one. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
We're running out of time here, but I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
I was thinking about this on Saturday.
Okay.
I smoked myself at the Sandbox. It was a great day of riding with all my buddies, and
track looked great.
Oh my God. It was incredible. It was just one of those days. Like, you just kept riding. I knew I was tired, but I just had to keep riding because I'm having so much fun. Right.
Yep.
We went to pizza after. I don't know if it was the highest quality pizza place, but no adult beverages. But I was thinking, Coach, if it's you and you're on your way home and you don't have a meal, you know, your beautiful bride didn't prep you a meal for the ride home.
Yeah.
Where's Coach Rob stopping?
You know, it's funny. The theme today is going to be Italian, but that's usually where I'll go to because I really, really enjoy pizza. I like the deep crust. I like the thick crust bread. And I'm just a huge vegetable freak. I don't know why. I just, to me, they don't some people say they're bland or all this. I just feel like they're almost like a little bit of a sweetness when you cook them. And I'll always go for the pizza. And as you guys know, I love craft beer. So as long as I've got a designated driver, it's going to be pizza and it's going to be a couple craft beers for sure.
Yeah, there's my go-to. Folks.
Yeah, you're my go-to.
You're cleared to stop at the pizza parlor on the way home.
Yep. And I've had guys that they'll be like, you know what? I sweat so much and I'm a heavy sweater. Guys will like Chinese, you know, hit Panda Express or something, a little bit of extra sodium in the soy sauce and stuff. That's what's so cool is just find what works for you. And also pay attention to those cravings. Like I said, if you're somebody's a heavy sweater, don't be surprised. Like your gear's got that salt crusty look on it. If you cycle, your cycling shorts will have that white crusty salt line, you know, right at the bottom of your jersey. You have to be a student of yourself, especially this is called the vet show, right? We should know a lot about what we're capable of, limitations. Not that they can't be elevated, but know what your limitations are. Be able to understand the feedback. And I think what you brought up here today was great. You know, we've got some big races coming up. Approach it. You know, we're not trying to give you a false sense of confidence, but approach it realizing you don't want to leave your best training efforts out there a week early. We want to make sure that you have a way to evaluate success of the race. Not that you won. That's what you trained to do. How do you evaluate the success and then your ability to recover from it? Because think about it. If we put all these together, you learn how to recover. Well, then it helps your preparation. Dial in your preparation, makes the race results. And now what you've done is you've created a circle of success. That's why our program is called the Blueprint of Success, right? You have a house that you want me to build, Dan. What do you give me? We just had Jeff Scott on our previous show together, right? He's a high-end builder. If you see something that you like, you don't just say, hey, build that. You go and you buy the blueprints and they build based on that blueprint. And that's what we're trying to help with our listeners is let's build you a vet-specific blueprint. I would encourage you to join the membership area. We've got the express workouts in there for you. Use them. That's why they're there. I get it. Not everybody's got 90 minutes of time, but let's work. And by the way, the express workouts are 30 to 40 minutes, weight training, cross training. The seat time's a different story because if you're going to take the time to get geared up and go to the track, I'm not going to only give you 20 minutes worth of work at the track. I'm always going to give you at least an hour's worth. And there is seat time in there for everybody. So, but Dan, this has been a good one. I like where you're going.
Yeah.
Especially with some big races coming up. And anybody who's listening to this, best of luck, not only for the races that are coming up, but the ones that are 6 months out from now, because hopefully today's show gets you to understand how important it is. So good subjects.
And share your results, guys. Share your results in the comment section, Instagram message. Well, however you consume us, share your results with us. We love to hear that. Thank you, Coach Rob, for today. Thank you to all of our listeners, all of our YouTube subscribers. Make sure you guys like, subscribe, share with your grandma, uncle, whoever you need to share it with, share us. Check out CoachRobStore.com for energy, fuel, supplements. Coach Rob cookbooks are amazing. There's a lot of good stuff there. So, Coach, last parting words for episode 11.
Thank you so much to all the listeners new, as well as those that have been with us from the beginning. We deeply appreciate all of you, and we look forward to chatting with you next month.
See you on episode 12.
Peace.